A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about people who share a name with someone famous or infamous, and what that actually does to a person's life. He pointed us toward a specific case. Dr. Trump, an oncologist and cancer researcher at the University of Colorado, Anschutz Medical Campus. Over 100 peer-reviewed papers, decades building a reputation in cancer research, and his name, in academic databases, appears as Trump DL,
which is the standard abbreviation format. Last name, first initial, middle initial. Completely unremarkable, until the last name becomes globally synonymous with a former president.
So now imagine you're a grant reviewer, or a patient looking up your doctor, and you type Trump Cancer Research into PubMed. What comes back is a tangle. And somewhere in there, this man's actual scientific work on prostate cancer biomarkers and clinical trial design, fighting for algorithmic visibility against a namesake who dominates every search index on Earth.
This isn't hypothetical. I pulled up his publication record he's been publishing since the 1980s. He was at Roswell Park Cancer Institute, then the University of Colorado. His work is legitimately cited in the oncology literature. But try finding it cleanly on Google Scholar without the algorithm deciding you probably meant to search for something else entirely. The disambiguation fails.
That's the hoof Daniel's getting at. What happens when your professional identity, built over decades, gets algorithmically hijacked by a namesake you have zero control over? It's not just inconvenience. It's the collision of personal legacy with public perception.
The thing is, he's far from alone. Once you start looking, there's a whole taxonomy of people living in the shadow of someone else's name recognition. Some of it's funny, some of it's genuinely dangerous.
We are going to trace this from the mildly absurd to the legally nightmarish. The mechanisms that cause it, the knock-on effect nobody talks about, and what you can actually do if you're one of these people, or if you're about to name a child and don't want to accidentally saddle them with a name that'll be radioactive in 10 years.
Let's start with the oncologist. The L stands for Lynn, by the way.
Of course, you looked that up.
It's his primary disambiguation strategy, a single letter standing between him and total search engine invisibility. But even with the L, the algorithms still struggle. Academic databases use automated author disambiguation systems, and they're not great at handling cases where one name is overwhelmingly dominant in public consciousness. The system sees Trump, and the weight of the other Donald Trump search footprint bleeds in.
The algorithm is essentially saying, we know what you're probably looking for, and it's not prostate cancer biomarkers.
This matters in concrete ways. Citation metrics affect hiring, tenure, grant funding. If your papers are harder to find or buried under pages of unrelated political content, that has real career consequences. A 2012 study in the Journal of the American Society for Information Science and Technology found that authors with common names are systematically disadvantaged in citation metrics because of disambiguation errors.
It's a tax on having the wrong name, an identity externality.
That's the perfect term for it. An externality, like pollution, but for your reputation. Someone else's actions create a cost that lands on you, and you had nothing to do with it.
The Trump case is almost gentle compared to what we'll get into. He's sharing a name with a controversial political figure, but not a dictator or a terrorist. The oncologist can still publish, still get cited. He just has to fight through algorithmic noise. Other people face actual doors slamming shut.
And that's the distinction Daniel's prompt is really pointing toward. There's a spectrum here. On one end, people who share a name with a celebrity. Annoying, occasionally funny, mostly manageable. On the other end, people whose name matches a war criminal, and suddenly they can't renew a driver's license.
Let's zoom out. What are we actually looking at? An identity problem? An algorithmic problem? Or a social psychology problem?
It's all three, compounding. The social psychology layer is the oldest. Humans have always made snap judgments based on names. There's decades of research on name-based discrimination in hiring. The algorithm layer is newer and amplifies everything. And the identity layer is where it gets personal, someone's actual life being reshaped by forces they can't control.
I want to pull apart those two categories Daniel's hinting at. Category 1, sharing a name with a celebrity. Category 2, sharing a name with someone reviled. The baggage is fundamentally different.
The celebrity case, there was a great Time article from November 2015 that documented several of these. One woman named Taylor Swift, a stay-at-home mom in England, started getting fan mail and threats meant for the pop star. People would propose to her online. She couldn't get a Facebook account because the platform's name verification system flagged her as an impersonator.
She was digitally erased because her name was too famous.
Facebook's system saw Taylor Swift and assumed anyone registering with that name was trying to impersonate the celebrity. The algorithm couldn't conceive of a second, entirely real, Taylor Swift who just happened to be born with the same name.
Which is a fascinating assumption baked into the code, that names are unique identifiers. They're not. They never have been.
That assumption keeps causing problems at scale. Every system that treats a name as a primary key is going to produce these collisions. The Taylor Swift in England also started receiving wedding invitations meant for the singer. People found her address and assumed.
The other category is darker. People named Osama bin Laden. There are multiple documented cases. BBC and The Guardian covered this, of men with that name being detained at airports, having their homes raided, their cars vandalized, losing jobs after 9/11. One man reported being stopped and questioned every single time he flew, for years.
That's not algorithmic. That's human beings seeing a name on a passport and reacting. But the algorithm layer makes it worse because now the name follows you permanently. Before the internet, you could move to a new town and your name was just your name. Now, a landlord Googles you before renting, an employer Googles you before hiring, and your name is permanently lashed to someone else's atrocities in the search results.
There's a documented case of a man named Adolf Hitler in New Jersey who was denied a driver's license renewal and had to get a court order to prove he wasn't a threat. A court order to renew a license.
That name, Adolf Hitler. It's not just infamous. It's uniquely toxic. There's essentially no context in which that name appears neutrally in a database. Every system that encounters it is going to flag it. Banks, airlines, employers, landlords. You're not just inconvenienced, you're administratively quarantined.
What do you even do at that point? You can't just introduce yourself differently at a dinner party and hope it blows over. Your name is on your birth certificate, your social security card, your tax records.
That's where we get into the legal name change question, which we'll dig into later. But it's expensive, it's public record, and it doesn't clean up your digital past.
We've got this spectrum. On the mild end, the oncologist who shares a name with the president. Professionally annoying, algorithmically frustrating. In the middle, the Taylor Swifts of the world. Digitally erased by automated systems that can't handle name collisions. On the extreme end, people whose names match dictators or terrorists, facing real discrimination, real danger, real administrative dead ends.
What unites all of these is that the person had no agency in any of it. They didn't choose the association. They didn't contribute to the fame or infamy. They're just there, holding a name that suddenly means something entirely different than it did when their parents chose it.
That's the identity externality. And it's worth sitting with how strange that is, that a complete stranger's actions can impose real costs on your life simply because of a string of characters you both happen to share.
How does this actually work? What are the mechanisms that cause your identity to get tangled up with a stranger's? Because it's not random, there are specific technical and social dynamics that produce these collisions, and they're getting worse as more of our lives move online.
The oncologist is the perfect spine for this. Walk me through what happens when you search for Donald Trump's cancer research.
The core problem is what computer scientists call entity resolution, or more precisely, the failure of it. When a search engine or academic database encounters the string, Donald Trump, it has to decide, is this one person or multiple people? The default assumption, baked into most disambiguation algorithms, is that repeated instances of the same name probably refer to the same entity.
Which works fine for unique names. If you search Herman Poppleberry, the algorithm correctly assumes there's only one of you.
Thank goodness for that. But when the name is shared with someone who has an enormous digital footprint, the algorithm's probability weighting breaks. The system sees millions of pages, news articles, and Wikipedia entries for one Donald Trump, and maybe a few hundred academic papers for another. The weight of the famous one essentially crushes the other in the relevance ranking.
It's not that the oncologist papers disappear. They're just buried under an avalanche of political content.
And in PubMed specifically, the author disambiguation system uses name, institutional affiliation, co-authors, and publication history to cluster papers. Trump's papers appear as Trump DL, and Trump DL is close enough to Trump D that a fuzzy matching algorithm can get confused, especially if someone searching drops the middle initial.
Which most people would. Nobody searches for Trump DL prostate cancer. They search for Trump cancer research.
At that point, the search engine has to guess which Donald Trump you mean. Given the relative search volumes, it's going to bet on the famous one every time. That same 2012 study I mentioned quantified this. Authors with common names are systematically undercited because of disambiguation errors. Their papers get attributed to the wrong person or lost in the noise.
It's a citation tax. Your work is literally harder to find and less likely to be credited to you, through no fault of your own. And citations affect everything. Hiring, tenure, grant funding. If a grant reviewer does a quick background search and sees a muddled mess of politics and oncology, the impression is fuzzier, less authoritative.
The second mechanism is what I'd call the Google problem as professional liability. A 2017 CareerBuilder survey found that 70% of employers use social media to screen candidates. If your name is Adolf Hitler or Osama bin Laden, the first page of results is going to be devastating.
Before you've even walked in the room.
Before you've sent a resume, in some cases. And the human psychology here is brutal. It's the halo effect in reverse. A single negative association colors everything else. The hiring manager sees the name, has an immediate visceral reaction, and then, if they even keep reading, interprets everything else about you through that lens.
You're not being evaluated on your qualifications. You're being evaluated on whether you can overcome the name. And most people don't get the chance, because they never get the interview.
The name alone triggers what psychologists call an availability cascade. The most vivid, emotionally charged associations with that name flood the evaluator's mind, and the quiet reality of the individual person can't compete.
Which brings us to the third mechanism, the asymmetry of fame. A celebrity's name recognition is a massive positive asset for them. But it's a negative externality for their namesakes. The Taylor Swift case is the textbook example. Facebook's system saw Taylor Swift, and its only model of that name was the globally famous singer. The idea that another human being might legitimately share that name didn't compute.
That's not a bug in Facebook's system, exactly. It's a structural limitation of using names as identity tokens. Every platform that does name verification faces this. The famous person's identity essentially colonizes the namespace.
Colonizes the namespace. That's exactly what's happening.
There's a related concept, nominative determinism. The idea, half joking and half serious, that people gravitate toward professions that match their names. The evidence is mixed, but the concept is useful here because we're looking at the dark inverse of it. Nominative determinism suggests your name might subtly pull you toward a path. What we're describing is your name forcibly shoving you off whatever path you chose, because the name's baggage overrides any personal agency.
It's nominative determinism by hostile takeover. You don't get to decide what your name means. The world decides for you.
Once that association is set, it's extraordinarily hard to break. The oncologist can publish 100 papers, and he's still going to be algorithmically tangled with the president. The Taylor Swift in England can live a completely unrelated life, and she's still going to get wedding invitations meant for the singer. The man named Osama bin Laden can be a pacifist accountant, and he's still going to be detained at airports.
Because the name has become a brand, and brands are sticky. They override nuance, context, individuality. You're not a person with a name. You're a collision with a brand that someone else built.
We've seen the mechanisms. The algorithmic collapse, the Google problem, the asymmetry of fame. Now let's talk about what people actually do in response. Because once you realize your name is a liability, you have basically three options: lean in, hide, or legally change it.
That's the name branding strategy.
Some people decide that if they can't beat the association, they'll weaponize it. There are documented cases of Donald Trumps who became real estate agents. The name actually helps in that specific context. There are Taylor Swifts who started cover bands. One started a blog called The Other Taylor Swift to carve out her own digital territory.
Which is clever. You're acknowledging the elephant in the room and building something distinct around it. But that only works if the namesake is a celebrity, not a dictator. Nobody's starting a cover band called The Other Osama Bin Laden.
No, and that's the asymmetry again. For the oncologist, the middle initial L is his lean-in strategy, a single character that says, different Donald Trump, keep reading. It's subtle, but effective.
Then there's the hide strategy. People who just disappear from public view. Use pseudonyms professionally. Avoid social media entirely.
This is what I think of as the chilling effect on free expression. People named after dictators report self-censoring online. They don't comment on news articles. They don't have LinkedIn profiles. They essentially opt out of digital life because any footprint they create could be algorithmically tangled with their infamous namesake.
That's a form of digital redlining. You're excluded from public discourse based on a characteristic you didn't choose and can't control. Professional networking, job hunting, even dating. All of these now happen through platforms where your name is your primary identifier. If you can't safely use your real name, you're locked out of huge swaths of modern life.
Which brings us to option 3, the legal name change. There's a case from BBC reporting of a man named Osama bin Laden who legally changed his name to Osama bin Laden Smith. He added a distinguishing element rather than fully erasing the original. He kept the name but gave it an escape hatch.
Even that is expensive. Legal name changes run anywhere from $150 to over $500, require court appearances, and here's the kicker, they don't fix your digital past. Every record, every publication, every news mention under your old name stays there forever.
The Adolf Hitler case in New Jersey, he had to get a court order just to renew a driver's license. That's not a name change. That's a legal proceeding to prove you're not a threat, simply because of what your parents wrote on a birth certificate. The administrative burden is staggering.
There's a whole subgenre of name confusion lawsuits. People suing for defamation because search results conflate them with a criminal namesake. The legal system wasn't built for this problem. Defamation requires someone to have actually made a false statement about you. But an algorithm merging two identities isn't making a statement. It's just failing. Most of these lawsuits go nowhere.
What can someone actually do? If you're listening and you share a name with someone famous or infamous, what's the practical move?
There are basically four moves. The first, and most important, claim your digital identity before the algorithm claims it for you.
I mean that literally. For anyone in a profession where your name gets published, academia, medicine, law, journalism, register an ORCID ID. It's free, it takes 10 minutes, and it gives you a persistent digital identifier that follows you no matter what. Over 10 million researchers have one now. It doesn't fix everything, but it creates a clean separation layer between you and your namesakes and any system that respects ORCID.
Which is increasingly most of them. Grant systems, journal submissions, institutional repositories, they all ask for it now. For non-academics, the equivalent is claiming your Google Knowledge Panel. If you search your own name and see a panel on the right side of the results, you can claim it and tell Google which facts are actually about you.
The second move is the Donald L. Pick, a distinguishing element, a middle initial, a professional title, a suffix, and use it everywhere, ruthlessly, for years. You're essentially building a parallel brand that search engines can learn to separate from the famous one.
The key word there is ruthlessly. Inconsistency kills this strategy. If you're Dr. Doctor, Donald Trump, oncologist, on LinkedIn, but Donald Trump on your research papers, the algorithm sees two different people, or worse, it merges you back into the famous one. You have to pick one format and stick to it like a trademark.
The third move is for parents. Before you name a child, run a search. Not just for the name's current associations. Think about what it could mean in 10 years. The example that always comes to mind is Isis. Beautiful name, Egyptian goddess, thousands of years of history, and then within about 18 months it became globally synonymous with a terrorist organization.
There were probably parents in 2013 who named their daughter Isis and felt great about it, By 2015, they were having very different conversations at the playground. You can't predict everything. No parent in 1935 could have known what Adolf would mean by 1945. But you can at least check what the name's current footprint looks like. If the first three pages of search results are a disaster zone, maybe reconsider.
The fourth move is the broader one, and it's not something an individual can solve, but it's worth understanding. This whole phenomenon reveals a design flaw in how we build identity systems. We keep treating names as unique identifiers, and they're not. They never were.
The fix isn't trivial. You can't just replace names with numbers. People hate that, and for good reason. But we're probably heading toward a world where high-stakes contexts require a cryptographic or biometric identity layer underneath the name. Academic publishing already has ORCID. Financial transactions have KYC. Eventually we'll need something similar for any domain where mistaken identity has real consequences.
While preserving pseudonymity for everything else, you don't need to prove who you are to post a restaurant review. But you might need to prove who you are to publish a paper, or open a bank account, or renew a driver's license, especially if your name happens to be a lightning rod.
None of this solves the social psychology layer, the human snap judgment, the hiring manager who sees Osama bin Laden on a resume and just moves to the next one. No amount of ORCID IDs fix that, but that's a much older problem. Name-based discrimination predates search engines by centuries. What's new is the permanence and the scale. And what's actionable is everything we just said. Claim your identity, disambiguate consistently, and if you're naming a human being, maybe Google it first.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1840s, explorers documented a lava tube in Turkmenistan containing a species of blind cave cricket whose antennae measured 9 times its body length. The modern equivalent would be a human walking around with 30-foot sensory appendages.
30-foot antennae.
I'll be thinking about that one for a while.
Here's what I keep circling back to. We've talked about the present. Algorithms tangling up identities. People fighting to disambiguate themselves from famous namesakes. But what happens when anyone can generate fake papers, fake tweets, fake videos under your name?
This is where it gets unsettling. Right now, the problem is sharing a name with one other person. A celebrity, a dictator, whoever. But with generative AI, the threat isn't one namesake, it's infinite namesakes. Anyone can prompt a model to produce content in your name. Blog posts, academic abstracts, social media screeds, and the volume could be enormous.
The identity externality becomes unbounded. It's not one famous person imposing costs on you anymore. It's anyone with an internet connection and a grudge.
The disambiguation tools we have now, ORCID, knowledge panels, consistent middle initials. They're not built for that world. They assume the problem is distinguishing between a small number of real people who happen to share a name. They're not designed to handle a flood of synthetic content all claiming to be you.
Which means we may need a fundamentally different approach. Verified identity layers for anything high stakes. Academic publishing, financial transactions, legal documents, where you cryptographically prove you're the one who wrote something.
The tricky part is preserving pseudonymity for everything else. You don't want a world where every comment on every forum requires a biometric scan. That's a surveillance state. The line has to be drawn carefully, verified where it matters, anonymous where it doesn't.
That line is going to be fought over for the next decade. But the principle is clear. Names were never unique identifiers, and pretending they are keeps producing these collisions. At some point, the systems have to catch up to that reality.
Here's my closing thought for anyone listening. Search your own name right now. Not later, not eventually. Pause this and look at the first page of results. If what comes back doesn't reflect who you actually are, you've got work to do. Claim your profiles. Register your identifiers. Build enough of a digital footprint that the algorithm can tell you apart from whoever else shares your name.
If you're about to name a child, maybe do the same search first.
This has been My Weird Props. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping us on the rails.
If you enjoyed this episode, rate us 5 stars and tell a friend who has a common name. They might need to hear it.
We'll be back next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.